Welcome to Leadership, the unapologetic political podcast where we dive headfirst into the world of leadership, politics, and those pivotal issues that often go unaddressed. We're here to empower, educate, and ignite change with a special focus on inspiring women to step into positions of influence. In this podcast, we don't shy away from tough conversations. We're all about getting down to brass tacks, discussing what truly matters, and encouraging you to take the reins. Join us on this journey as we unravel the intricacies of leadership, delve into the political landscape, and tackle the uncharted territories of vital issues. Leadership is your platform for unfiltered, honest, and inspiring discussions that will drive you to make your mark on the world. Let's get started. Well, thank you. Welcome to Leadership with Tammy Wilson. I'm Tammy Wilson, and today I am talking with the writer and producer for Against All Enemies, which is a documentary. It talks all about domestic terrorism and veterans and the threat of what's coming in the future. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself, Ken?
Well, thank you so much for having me, Tammy. Ken Harbaugh produced and co-wrote Against All Enemies with an amazing team. I mean, films like this are never one-person shows. It was an incredible team behind it, and clearly we have struck a chord. I mean, the whole project began in the wake of January 6th and realizing how many of my fellow veterans were involved in that and trying to understand that. We released last week and rocketed to number one on the Apple TV documentary charts and just passed Dune and Barbie in the overall rankings. So
really saying something.
I see it as bad news disguised as good news, because there are a lot of Americans terrified about what is happening in the country right now and looking for answers, especially when it comes to these violent extremist groups like the Oath Keepers and the Three Percenters and the Proud Boys in particular, which has been name-checked by a president from a debate stage, telling them to stand by in case he didn't win an election. And things have only gotten worse since then.
Oh, I know. I've noticed the rhetoric has really amped up here. I know you've seen the same things that I do. But you're located here in Ohio as well, right?
I'm a Clevelander, that's right.
Yeah. So did you run for, I couldn't remember if it was for state or Congress.
Ohio 7, back in 2018, that was sort of the first reaction to Trump's election. And so many of us realized, oh my God. I mean, in 2016, I was one of like the majority of Americans who thought there's no way we'll elect this person. I even told my kids, don't worry, America will make the right decision. And the vast majority, well, not the vast majority, but the majority of Americans did. He lost the popular vote. But having to tell my daughters that morning that their next president was going to be Donald Trump was one of the toughest things I have ever done. And my reaction was to run for Congress in a deep red, mostly rural Ohio district that Trump won by 30 points. So you can guess how it went, but it was a valiant effort.
I had the exact same reaction, but to 2020, because I never thought I would ever get into politics. But like you, you know, I just look at where we're at as a country right now, and I just think to myself, where are we headed if we don't, you know, change course? And that's the things that I think about, you know, and just watching so much of the hate all the time. It is just, I hate all the division in our country. And I really appreciated your documentary. You know, I was married to a Marine for 10 years. I'm the granddaughter of World War II vet. So I come from a very patriotic family. You know, country and respect has always, you know, that's what I was taught. You know, when I went to the Capitol when I was 12, you whispered, you know, when you were in the Capitol, you know, you didn't do all the things that they did on January 6th, to say the least. How did you get so close to them is what I was really curious about. Was that your footage that you guys, you know, you took, or did you take someone else's footage?
We had incredible access. I mean, we had our own our own field producers who got most of that. And one of the striking things about the story of the Oath Keepers and Proud Boys and Three Percenters is how proud they are of their activities. Many of them, most of them, I would venture to say, think they are on the right side of the Constitution. They are on the right side of history. And that to me is one of the most infuriating aspects of this. Yeah. And it's because they've been lied to. It's because they have been provoked. And I think I think they should be held accountable 100%. But when I think about where the balance of the moral burden should be placed, it's on the provocateurs, the leaders who know better, the Josh Hawleys and J.D. Vances, speaking of an incredibly cynical Ohio politician, the Eric
Reiner. I love how you displayed what a flip-flopper he is.
Yeah, they know better. I mean, J.D. Vance is a Yale Law School grad, and yet they lie in the pursuit of power, and they lie in a way that foments violence and insurrection. And in the case of folks like JD, they are targeting veterans, and it's just I find it sickening. I find it unforgivable. And one of the most striking things about these conversations with these extremists is how sincere many of them seem in their beliefs, which is just the opposite of the feeling you get from the Hawleys and the Vances and the Greitens of the world. They are pure cynics.
Yeah. I have to tell you, when I was watching your film, you know, I heard them saying the same things that we say. Oh my God, they're destroying the country. You know, what are they doing? You know, they're anti-American. And I mean, we are all saying the same exact things about each other. I found that so striking.
Well, in this case, there aren't two sides. They are not supporting and defending the Constitution. They're undermining it. Yeah. But they feel like they're supporting and defending the Constitution because a president told them that they were. A president told them that their democracy was being stolen from them. And, you know, I'm not talking about all of them. Some of them do it out of a sense of racism and hate. But some of them do it because they have been goaded by political forces that they don't understand, that are just manipulating them into carrying out these acts of violence. And again, they should be absolutely held accountable. But let's not take our spotlight off of the political leaders who have encouraged this. I mean, we have had violent movements in this country before. We have had insurrectionist movements. But you have to go back a really long way in American history to find something analogous to today, where you have these anti-democratic movements that have the cover of a major political party.
Yeah.
And that's the real danger today. Yeah. You have a major political party, the Republican Party, that is providing cover to an insurrectionist movement, that in the case of the Proud Boys is providing cover to an organization that is deemed a terrorist entity by Canada. I mean, they are calling the insurrectionists who have been jailed for violent acts against cops hostages and martyrs.
I could not believe that. I heard Elise Stefanik say it first when she was on Meet the Press, I think. And I just about fell out of my chair. I was like, oh my God. And so now that's like their rhetoric that they keep repeating.
Yeah. And it is a portent of what's to come in 2024. I don't think anybody believes that even if Trump does lose, he's going to concede. Yeah. And these forces that we saw unleashed on January 6th have only grown in strength. I think most people don't realize that yet. And they see January 6th as a massive success. Even with all the convictions, even with the jail times, these groups look at that as a massive recruiting tool, which has actually led to a growth in their numbers. They look at it as an indicator of what a small group of dedicated people can do. And they look at it as an avenue to co-opt a political party, which it has done. You now have a political party defending January 6th. I think it was just a few days ago, the Speaker of the House, the most powerful person in Congress, two heartbeats away from the presidency, said that those insurrectionists were just taking a stroll through Congress.
I mean, I just don't understand how people can justify that. You know, I have to tell you, I was, after January 6th happened, you know, I have friends across the whole spectrum of humanity, whether they are living in a trailer on food stamps or they're CEOs living in tartan fields in Dublin, you know, making over $1 million a year, whatever. And I was speaking with one of those friends in tartan, educated person. And, you know, I just can't believe what happened on January 6th at the Capitol. And they said, well, how do you really know that happened, Tammy? I was like, I watched it on TV. Well, how do you know that was real footage? And I was just like, I was just floored when I heard this person say that. I mean, this is an educated person, but they don't watch regular TV anymore. They don't watch regular news. They're getting their news off the internet, off of social media. Domestic terrorism is one of the reasons why I got into this race. So I'm just curious. I have ideas of things that we need to do to, you know, attack it or reduce it. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think the number one thing we have to do is address the disinformation. We have to counter the lies being told out there, because so much of this violent activity is animated by a manufactured sense of grievance. Yeah. And let's just look at the big lie itself. There are other manufactured grievances. Nancy Mace was just saying that crime has skyrocketed under Joe Biden. Completely false. I mean, people are saying that the collapse of the Baltimore Bridge was either a terrorist attack or because of DEI. Yeah. So we have to do a better job at countering the lies that animate these forces of hate and division. And that is something that's incumbent upon all of us. When we hear this misinformation being spread, we need to call it out. And in my experience, the only thing that is truly effective in bringing people back from the brink of being involved in these organizations or being drawn into extremist movements is conversations with people who care about them. Conversations around the dinner table or over the holidays. It's not going to be a podcast. Sorry to break it to you. It's not going to be a chart of facts and figures. It's going to be people who care saying, you know, what you believe isn't true. And I know it because, you know, either I was there or, you know, I talked to people who were involved. I mean, I don't think someone who doesn't believe January 6th happened is going to be convinced it did by watching a news program. They're going to be convinced of the severity of it and the threat to democracy it posed by talking to someone like you one-on-one, by having a conversation with someone who they want to trust, who they know cares about them. And that's how we fix this.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Social media is also on my platform. I mean, we have to do more about the internet and protecting our airways. You know, we have the military to protect us physically, but we need something and, you know, government organization to protect us on the internet. Because, you know, if you go through a financial fraud or identity theft or something, you're on your own to fix it. But there's nothing there that's going to help you. But it is the constant mis and disinformation campaigns, either within our country or from other countries, you know, that I'm really concerned about too. Now, I also noticed in your documentary, you mentioned the fact that we don't have any domestic terrorism laws or anything. So I know you guys interviewed lawmakers. Have they even talked about doing anything about that or what?
Yeah, this is a tough issue. I'm actually conflicted on this one. And just to provide some of the context, we have very strong laws when it comes to international terrorist organizations. If you aid and abet an international terrorist organization, you're going down. I mean, if they can deliver the goods evidence-wise against you, you're going to be charged with terrorism. We don't have an equivalent for domestic terrorism. In fact, Timothy McVeigh, was not charged with terrorism because we don't have that kind of domestic terrorism charge. We had to charge him with multiple other counts, and obviously he got the maximum penalty. But we don't have a mechanism legally to charge people with domestic terrorism. And I've talked to very thoughtful people on both sides of this issue. People like Ali Soufan in the film, who advocates very strongly for the kinds of legal tools to be able to prosecute Americans engaged in domestic terrorism. And then others who say, look, this is the kind of thing that can be misused. I mean, we already saw President Trump threaten to classify Antifa as a domestic terrorist organization. Mm-hmm. So I think we have to think really long and hard about unintended consequences. And giving the Biden administration the tools to go after domestic terrorism would also provide those same tools to a less well-intentioned, a more nefarious executive. And we just have to think that out. I do think the FBI does a pretty good job with the tools it has, but we definitely need to consider the fact that material support cannot be charged as terrorism for on the domestic side, only on the international side.
Yeah, I found that really interesting, and I love how you showed the separation of the person versus like the organization. And I think that is the important piece that we really need, is to be able to identify and, you know, hold accountable the organizations behind the individuals. I mean, when January 6th happened, one of the things that they were talking about is who funded these people, who were the, you know, organizers behind everything. And so, you know, that is also a concern. But what are your thoughts about the fact that we had, you know, congressional members give these people tours the day before and meetings and, you know, and they're still sitting in Congress and talking about, you know, violating the 14th Amendment. You know, what are your thoughts about all of that?
Yeah, I think the voters have to throw them out. I do think there is a place for the 14th Amendment for those who can definitively be shown to have participated in insurrection. I mean, the 14th Amendment is pretty clear, and it was written, in my mind, for this kind of scenario. It was written after the Civil War so that literal insurrectionists could not seize power in the U.S. Congress. We have literal insurrectionists today, some of them running for office, who, per the Constitution, that they pretend to support and defend, should be barred. That, I think, has become more of a political question than a legal question, as we saw with the Colorado Supreme Court and its decision being overturned by the Supreme Court. But folks like your opponent, Jim Jordan, and, you know, the many, many other Republican members of Congress who abetted those insurrectionists in the moment, and I think more egregiously have since defended them, it's probably fair that some of them didn't see what was coming, even though they provoked it. I think Josh Hawley is a great example, fist-pumping insurrectionists from a safe distance and then running like hell the minute things got hairy. What a coward. But in the aftermath, with all the evidence in front of them, continuing to defend the actions of these people who interrupted the peaceful transfer of power, who tried to overthrow our democracy.
They don't even look at it like that, though.
No,
they don't even look at it like that. That's what blows my mind.
But it's why we need to be absolutely clear and have that moral clarity and convey it to the people that we influence, the people who follow us, to say, this is actually what happened. And all the retconning in the world is not going to change the facts of that day. And more importantly, the threat is still there.
Yeah. What do you hope to, you know, what impact are you hoping that your film has in the country? And I know you guys released it, and didn't you release it in Europe first?
Yeah, we released it in Europe first, and it did incredibly well over there. I should have known that that would be an indicator for how well it would do over here. I was still surprised, but it's been translated into French and German and on broadcast TV across Europe. My hope is that domestically, we get as many veterans and law enforcement officers as possible to see it. We have a campaign underway to help veterans see the film for free. It is available for purchase or rental on Apple TV, but we have a way to allow vets to see it for free, and we're hosting screenings across the country to present it that way and facilitate in-person conversations with veterans afterwards so that they can ask questions about it.
Ask you about screenings. I would love to do a screening.
Yeah, reach out to me afterwards. We've got a whole system, got a whole team set up that can help make those happen. And the important thing to me in that effort is facilitating conversations with the audience after the screenings, so that they can engage with the filmmakers. We do those virtually when the filmmakers can't get to a location, but absolutely open to that.
Oh, I think that would be wonderful. I went to another screening and they had a panel too, and it was so impactful to have that ability to, you know, speak with the filmmakers. I think that's a great idea. So what's the response been from people? I mean, I was a little bit aware of it because, like I said, this is part of my platform. I mean, I've been speaking with domestic terrorist experts in our country on what we can do to counteract it. So, you know, I've been, you know, knee deep into, you know, learning all about domestic terrorism. But what about other people? Have they just been totally, I mean, what has been their response?
The response has been overwhelming in a incredibly positive way. I think we still have 100% rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
I saw that. Yeah. You
know, like the social media response has been impossible to keep up with. And I think a large part of the reason is that people are surprised at how serious things have gotten. They are telling their friends about this. Hopefully we can keep this level of interest and concern up until the election, because I'm afraid if we let our guard down, the same thing will happen as happened in 2016, where a candidate who I never imagined Americans would elect became president and very nearly destroyed our democracy.
Yeah. What are your thoughts about 2025 after the election?
Well, regardless of the outcome, let's play both scenarios out. My hope is that Joe Biden wins and wins decisively. But even if he does, I think we all know how Donald Trump is going to react. He didn't concede the last time he lost. In fact, he unleashed a mob on the Capitol. I think he will do the same thing and worse again, because his most ardent followers are preparing. They are ready this time, and that should alarm all of us. In the event that Trump does win, that is even worse, because then he has the actual levers of power to execute some of the most dangerous promises he has made on the campaign trail. He has said that his next term will be the administration of vengeance, that he will impose costs and penalties on those who opposed him. He will not be a president for all Americans. He will be a president only for those who supported him, and he will persecute those who didn't. I think we need to take that incredibly seriously.
I know. Yeah. Yeah, it is hard to be optimistic. It alarms me. I mean, that the term Teflon Don, it has so much, you know, weight to it, because it does seem like nothing sticks to the guy. I mean, he just gets out of everything. And I'm just surprised at all of the things that he's been able to worm his way out of. And I'm really concerned about, you know, his effect on people. Did you see the social media post of him with the truck with Biden and the, I mean, and people think that's funny. I mean, it's just absolutely terrible. Well, I know you have to get going, so I just wanted to, speak with you, and I'm just really grateful that you took the time out to talk with me and, my viewers, so you can let them know everything that's going on and, give some more information out about the film and what prompted you to make it and everything too. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Tammy. It's been great talking to you.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us in the Leadership Podcast, the podcast designed to inform, educate, and empower you. I'm your host, Tammy Wilson. I hope today's show inspired you to take your next step in leadership in your life, in your community, and our world. I know together we can make the world a better place. Thank you, and see you next time. Until then, live to lead.